This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Whitehead joins us, the founder and executive director of the Rutherford Institute, based here in Charlottesville. We're always honored to have him in studio talking current events and your rights. The phone number again is 977-1070, 977-1070, if you wish to join this conversation at any time. How do you do, sir?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
It's been a while. I'm doing okay. We're all getting over colds and trying to get to sleep at a decent hour and not wake up at four anymore, but we're doing okay. you have written on a number of things recently, and folks should know that you are an extremely prolific writer. Let's just put it like that. You churn out thousands of words a week, and folks should know, if you're interested in those, you can go to Rutherford.org. That's the homepage of the Rutherford Institute if you want to see any of John Whitehead's writings and commentary. And you're working on a new book, which is very exciting. We'll get to that before the end of the hour. We definitely want to hear about that. But you recently wrote about John Lennon, which surprised me at first, and then I read the article and it made complete sense. But tell folks a little bit about this, where you were coming from, and what made you think to want to sit down and write some commentary about John Lennon.
Well, I've written a lot about the Beatles, the people who know me, and there's a new movie out called The U.S. versus John Lennon. It's a documentary that's slowly making its way to Charlottesville, and it's talks about the and discusses and examines the surveillance that was done on John Lennon by the government, which was prolific. I mean, they followed him, they tapped his phones, and the thing was, here's an ex-Beatle, that was basically it, who was walking the streets, marching, singing songs like Power to the People. And the government was extremely paranoid, especially the Nixon administration, because they thought he was going to go down in 1971 and disrupt the Republican convention there. And they actually put wanted posters. This is, believe it or not, this is not some of the stuff I've written, but they actually put wanted posters around Miami saying, if you see this man, report him. Pictures of John Lennon and the Beatle, which everybody knew anyway.
Oh, gosh.
And there's several dangerous things with that, though. If you put a wanted poster up, somebody's picture, that kind of puts notions in people's head, this guy, wanted dead or alive.
Yeah, they were afraid they'd have another Chicago.
And some people are talking about, though, the fact that what kind of mentality drove the government to do that? Because, again, you have a lot of people, imbalanced people, that look at those kind of things, and they start looking. You know, who knows what happens to those? And then we find out that they referred to him as Mr. Lennon, and the night he got shot by Mark David Chapman, he referred to him as Mr. Lennon before he got in a combat stance and shot him. But it's just very interesting to see how democracy can be undermined when the government gets ready. Now, in February 2006, we learned that President Bush had been authorizing the National Security Agency to do all this listening in on domestic phone calls. Well, the point is that my research back on the National Security Agency, which was founded in 1952, starting in the 1960s, they started doing that. And they have such amazing, today, fiber optic communications, internet, and all the kind of things they can use, that the LA Times just issued a report after talking to privacy experts and former government employees, and they indicate that since 9/11, this has dramatically increased, and that although it's nothing new, there really isn't anything that's not private anymore in this country. And you know, there is a Privacy Act, 1974, which prohibits the government from collecting databases. They can't do that. But they use, I don't know how many people have heard of this company, ChoicePoint, which had some of their stuff stolen, their records stolen about
three or four
months ago.
Yeah,
big, huge company. But they actually collect databases, and the government, instead of collecting that data, they go to that database and contract with it and get information on private citizens, bank accounts, and this is American citizens. So what's happened, and I think the Lennon thing is a good example, we've moved into a surveillance state, essentially, in what some people call the electric concentration camp. We're watched by the government. There's nothing that we do most of the time, really, that a lot of government officials don't know. And the fact that it was revealed recently that some of the major cities, including Los Angeles being one, the police now are using a form of computer technology where they drive down the street and they read all the license plate numbers throughout the city in these vans and then categorize those. And they can pull your name off of it and match it against certain files and tell when you leave your home, where you drive, and those kind of things. That's being collected by ordinary police. You don't know they're doing it because they're driving around the city in these innocuous-looking vans doing it. So The thing that's
like
happened,
something out of a science fiction
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, exactly. This is what we used to talk about being science fiction, but the thing about it now is it's no longer science fiction. It's actually, it's been going on a long time. That's the thing. People were shocked by, what supposedly was new things going on since 9/11, but I've discovered as early as the 1970s, the NSA was doing all kinds of things like that. The FBI monitored, remember that the FBI actually tapped Martin Luther King's phones and sent him suicide notes asking him to kill himself. So the government that of this country has been doing those things for a long time. And the problem with most Americans, and they seem so shocked, like 6 months we knew, but why didn't we know about this earlier? Because people have been writing about this for a long time, and we forget the lessons of the so-called founding fathers, like James Madison, who said we ought to mistrust everybody in power, and he had a reason for saying
that. Yeah, and that was one of the greatest lessons of Thomas Jefferson. We'll create a government for you, but your duty is to absolutely suspect us. At every step along the way, and to question us and to doubt us. Anybody that holds power in this society, your duty is to question them and be suspicious of them, of anyone who wields power.
What's in our Bill of Rights? You look at the First Amendment. The First Amendment's really clear. It says that you have a right to free press. You have a right to free speech. You have a right to freedom of religion. You have a right to protest the government. You have a right to go to the government and say, I don't like what you're doing. And so what's saying there is not only do we have a right to have certain information, but we have a right to have control over that information. But here's the problem. If you don't know that the government's collecting information on you, how do you have control of that? And that's the problem we face. And is there really – that's the question I think we face today is we know they're going to be doing it. There's nothing that can stop the government, in my opinion, because of technology, basically. Technology doesn't discriminate. That's the problem with it. When a policeman or a federal agent with a certain amount of technology looks at something, the technology is not going to say good guy or bad guy. It's just going to collect the information. And then they have the information. And are we so naive to think that they're going to take the information and toss it in the waste can? No, they're not. They're going to keep those files. And the problem with that is that sometimes innocent citizens find out. They go – a good example is a fellow in the 2002 election went to vote down in Florida, a guy named Matthew Frost. And he got there to vote, and they told him he couldn't vote. He was a felon. Guy had never committed a crime in his life. And what had happened, someone had stole his file. It was through this Choice Point company and with a similar name. And after 2 years later, he got to vote finally, 2 years too late. But an innocent person. So I think that we've instead of giving the government more leeway to do surveillance, collect information, our Congress is going to have to get on the ball. And our state legislatures, if need be, our city councils, and sometimes we're going to just say no and start blocking some of this access to our information.
John Whitehead is the executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute, based here in Charlottesville and known around the world. John, the problem, of course, is that there's a lot of folks listening right now who are thinking, well, if you're doing something wrong, I'm all for the government finding out about it. You shouldn't be doing it. That's number one. Number two is we are fighting an enemy that we've never fought before, the likes of which we've never seen. And we're going to have to do things differently. And as a result, you see the Congress just today is getting ready to approve three major things. They're going to allow the president. They're going to just get rid of habeas corpus. The president will be allowed to put anybody in jail that he wants to without a charge for as long as he wants to. He'll be allowed to wiretap anybody he wants to, including Americans, without court order. And he'll be allowed to torture folks that the Army has captured, or even the CIA, or somebody, a private organization contracted by the CIA.
Well, there are folks who believe, obviously a number of them in the Congress and probably our president at a certain point, no matter what he says, the platitudes about freedom, that security and freedom are mutually exclusive terms, but they're really not. So the question is whether or not, and again, I go back to the First Amendment, our Fourth Amendment, our Eighth Amendment. Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment, the Fourth Amendment against the sanctity of our homes and our bodies. And the First Amendment, just integrity as individuals, that we have a right to protest, we have a right to information, we have a right to speak. All those speak to dignity of the human being. And the question is it time for our government to undermine everything we believe in order to hope to catch?
In the name of some security.
Some security initiative, hope we'll catch some kind of terrorist.
In the name of a war on terror. Yeah, just hoping that you might capture somebody. And meanwhile, they go through millions of innocent people in the process.
And billions of files.
Yeah.
And collect information. And the question is not so much have you done anything wrong? The question is, should the government or does the government, under our present scheme of government, under our Constitution, Bill of Rights, have a right to do those kind of things? And under our present scheme of government, it does not have that right to do that.
Yeah. What scares me the most is if you see stuff like that, if you see us literally stripping the principles away out of the Constitution and doing away with them in the name of a war on terror, they win. They won. And what people don't get is these folks do not have to knock down one other building to win.
Well, Osama bin Laden said that. He said, after 9/11, Americans are going to, the U.S. government's going to make it hell for American citizens. And that's exactly what their plan was. And it's working. So, it goes back to the same thing we were talking about. There have to be some controls sooner or later because, if there's not some kind of check, if there's not rule of law, if we don't operate under a system where there are limits on government, and what they're asking for in that bill today and other bills we'll talk about in a moment is just sort of absolute power. And did the people who wrote the Constitution, did they really imagine an imperial president who could just say, Coy, you're a enemy combatant, and they lock you away? That's all they got to say.
Well, that's what Alexander Hamilton wanted. Yeah. So. The website is Rutherford.org. The man is John Whitehead. Let's take a quick break. We invite you to join the conversation at 977-1070.
4 years ago, then-Virginia offensive coordinator Bill Musgrave helped Matt Schaub win ACC Player of the Year. 4 years later, they're reunited with the Atlanta Falcons. Tonight, Musgrave is our guest on The Best Seat in the House, next from 6 to 8.
On select models with approved credit. See dealer for details. Stock number 11447A plus tax tag title and 248 processing fee ends September 30th.
This just in. People from all over Virginia are headed to the Brown Used Car Supercenter for what appears to be the ultimate used car clearance. Sources are reporting over 500 high-quality, low-mileage, pre-owned vehicles to choose from. With prices starting at only $4,995, traffic is building up on 29 North. More breaking news. Zero down at Brown on Toyotas, Hondas, Chevrolets, Fords, Nissans, Hyundais, Chryslers, Volkswagens, Dodges, and many more. 10 acres of like new cars, trucks, vans, and SUVs, many still under factory warranty. Witnesses are reporting that Brown used cars are protected by Carfax, a multi-point inspection, and a 2,000-mile warranty. Plus, get our 7-day exchange policy. Hurry down to the ultimate used car clearance. Only at the Brown Used Car Supercenter. Route 29 North next to the Golden Corral. Online at brownautos.com.
Brown, Brown, Brown.
Brown, you love the service.
An eagle symbolizes freedom, and Eagle Window Home Improvement Company offers you the freedom to enjoy the great outdoors, no matter what the weather.
So, you want to share your opinion with Central Virginia?
Well, act like a tennis shoe and just do it. The phone number is 977-1070. The show is Charlottesville right now on News Radio 1070 WINA.
-73 degrees in Central Virginia, so glad you could join us. We're talking with John Whitehead, Executive Director and Founder of the Rutherford Institute. We always look forward to these conversations, and we especially look forward to you joining this conversation at 977-1070. Jim is on the phone in Charlottesville. Jim, you're on with John Whitehead.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
You know, Big Brother's already here in Charlottesville, according to a county detective friend of mine. All these TV cameras at all the intersections, they're all being videotaped. And then if a crime occurs, after the fact, they'll go back and review the tapes for that area of town and see if they can pick up anything.
I didn't even know there were cameras at the intersections in Charlottesville. Is that just in the city?
You'll see them all over.
Oh, yeah, they're all over.
I've tried to get the city to at least put access to them on the Internet now for a little over a year, but I don't get any response from them.
That's really interesting.
At least we ought to be able to watch, too. But
John, give us some context for this. Is this going on around the country? Is this normal?
Yeah, you have small communities now are buying these cameras. Yeah, they're most stoplights in most places I go these days, and they film everything going through the stoplight, whether you stop. They film your license plate number.
Is there a control center at City Hall, Jim? Do you know where they're watching all these?
Yeah, there's a central control center at the Public Works building, and what they've commonly used this for, and they're doing it, you know, of course, in our safety, public safety interest, but of course, they do it first and ask later, you know. But the case I'm aware of, this guy was committed breaking and entering at Avon Street Extended, and about 2 a.m. So they were able to look at the tapes and identify, they tracked down the owners of everyone that drove that street around the time they think it happened, and they were able to catch the criminal.
So, and of course, there's a whole bunch of people listening right now who are applauding, saying, well, there you go. What's wrong with this?
Well, there's obviously an argument for it, but it seems like we should at least be made aware when we're being watched.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more with that, and I like to think that I know a lot about what's going on around here, and I knew nothing about this.
Well, the surveillance cameras follow you in the stores. They follow you at school. They're everywhere. So what's happened is, without people really realizing, is that privacy is being completely destroyed. There's really nothing in private anymore. When you make a cell phone call, everything is cataloged, who you call, what time you called, how long you talked. All this data is being kept. And the thing is that it's not so much that they're doing it, it's the potential for abuse. And can it be abused? Absolutely. So the question is, should we be allowing that?
Jim, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Lonnie, who's also in Charlottesville. You're on with John Whitehead.
Good afternoon. I agree with most everything that was said, with one exception. I happen to work in the traffic department for the city. And I've installed those cameras, and I maintain them. And I do know for a fact that we do not record anything at all. We do not even have a recorder to do so.
So it's just somebody monitoring in real time?
Exactly. We monitor in real time, and our only purpose of them is to observe the traffic so we can make adjustments to our traffic signals.
But Jim was just talking about a case where they found somebody by looking at tapes from some of these cameras.
Not from any of our cameras. The police department has cameras that they can take out and install and do surveillance with them, and they have the ability to record, and they do that. In fact, they were able to apprehend an individual that was breaking into the city parking meters doing that very thing. But it was not from traffic cameras. It was strictly from police cameras.
Well, that's fascinating.
That's fascinating.
Lonnie, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate that. And we're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, executive director and founder. Caller, what's your first name?
Floyd.
Floyd, go right ahead. You're on with John Whitehead.
Yeah. I was curious myself when the cameras first started going up, and I noticed them at the intersections off the interstate on the ramps and stuff. And I called the Department of Transportation, and they told me that the signals do not go out of those cameras to anywhere. They're strictly for traffic control and their motion detectors. They're not being used as cameras per se.
That's really interesting.
I don't know if that's true or not. That's what they told me when I asked about it. They said there's no transmission of the signals out away from the site. It's strictly for traffic control, like the magnetic loops in the asphalt are used.
Right, right.
What do they mean by traffic control?
Just to control the stoplight sequencing. So if somebody's riding a bicycle or a motorcycle, it might not trigger the inductive loop in the asphalt, but the motion would trigger the camera. The camera looks for motion. So they can see if there's a vehicle waiting to cross on the side that's got the red light.
So it's not, it doesn't make much sense to me, but it's not exactly what they have on the streets of London, put it that way.
It doesn't
exactly
seem to be.
That's what the Department of Transportation told me.
Floyd, thank you so much for the call. Let's hear from you again. We'd appreciate it. We're talking with John Whitehead, executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute. We're going to take a break for some local news and weather here at the bottom of the hour. In the next half hour, we got a whole lot more to get to and a whole lot more calls, and we look forward to hearing from you at 977-1070. This is Charlottesville right now.
Heaven may have stars.
Every time I get there, I go in and people rush out to me, almost take the glasses right off my face and clean them and adjust them and put them back.
Customer loyalty for a good reason.
Over the years, folks down there have just become good friends, and it's a pleasure just to walk in and say hello sometimes.
The Spectacle Shop on the Downtown Mall at Rio Hill Center and at the Millmont Shops.
Hi, I'm Larry Sabato, and I'm going barefoot.
You're listening to Charlottesville right now with Coy Barefoot on News Radio 1070 WINA.
.535 on the clock, 73 degrees outside, 35 minutes after 5. In the next hour, best seat in the house, 2 hours of fun just for you right here on News Radio 1070 WINA. Phone number is 977-1070, 977-1070. Would love to hear from you. Join the conversation. We're talking with John Whitehead, executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute. What is this, John, about some kind of legislation having to do with strip-searching kids? Refresh my memory there. I know there's something going on there.
Yes,
5295, and it just passed the House by a voice vote and is going to the Senate. And what it says is that if any schools receiving federal funds, teachers and school officials are mandated to do searches of students if they have a suspicion that there might be guns or weapons or dangerous materials or whatever on campus. It even possibly allows to strip searching kids. And a lot of civil libertarians are quite upset by this for a number of reasons. A, it teaches a bad lesson in political science. It teaches kids that the teachers are really police now. But that's a problem because teachers aren't police, and they don't know how to do searches, and they probably don't know when they should do a search or what probable cause is. And so there are a lot of problems with it. But
so you have the police, the local police, who, you know, these like resource officers who work in the schools will be having to do this for them. So you have police officers in the schools strip searching kids. They're mandated now by federal, or will soon be.
It will be if it passes the Senate, yeah.
Yeah, mandated.
It's a very, very political measure, because you can go back and say, look, we're cracking down on violence in the schools. And, you know, there are problems in the schools, but the question is this the way to handle it? And a number of studies have recently come up and say this is not the way to do it. In fact, the more police presence in schools, the more violent those particular schools happen to be for whatever reason.
Really? Studies show that?
Studies actually show that. And what they're saying, really, the way to handle this is smaller class sizes, less class changes, and a lot of measures that would really reduce violence or use of drugs in schools, but they're not even we're talking about that.
All the solutions that cost a lot of money for a school system.
But I think that should our kids go to school and expect that strip searches, for example, some have pointed to possible sexual harassment because there's been some problems with some sexual relations between students and teachers recently, and there's some problems with that. So there's a lot of problems with a teacher touching a student, by the way,
yeah.
Especially strip searching.
I gotta tell you, you know, I have 2 4-year-olds. The idea of sending them into an environment where the authority figures in that environment are mandated by federal law to strip search this kid if they have any suspicion, you know, with kids it's so easy to get accidentally mixed up in a group. And that's really, like a lot of this stuff, it's really frightening.
And I think that minorities should really be greatly concerned, because there is stereotyping. And if we find African-American students get targeted a lot quicker than white students in most schools for this kind of activity.
Yeah, yeah. John Whitehead is our guest. Update us about the Rich Collins case, because I know that in the new book you're writing, you're also writing about this. And the Rutherford Institute has worked with some attorneys who are working with Rich Collins on this very case. And, of course, he was in last week or the week before to tell us about a videotape that was discovered of the whole incident up there. And one of the biggest things that caught me on this videotape, because I saw it, you've seen it, is that the police officers who reported there, to their credit, Albemarle County police officers, to their great credit, they bent over backwards to try to figure out how not to arrest Rich Collins up at Shoppers World at Whole Foods. They didn't want to do it. It's so obvious on the videotape. They say over and over again, can we have a resolution here? Can we have a compromise? Please, gentlemen, we don't want to have to arrest you.
Yeah, Rich Collins is a controversial case around here because, you know, he was arrested in, is it Shoppers World?
Yeah, Shoppers World, the Whole Foods Shopping Center parking lot.
Whole Foods Shopping Center parking lot. And he came over and talked to me about the case. And the big fear I have in looking at the Kelo case, which has caused quite a reaction, where the property was taken from the homeowners for a large commercial venture that the city wanted to make more money on things
right.
Like people's property. What we're seeing, I think, across the United States is corporations buying up more and more property. And what we're going to find is that city squares are disappearing. And where people are going to have any kind of free speech at all, it's probably going to be in outdoor shopping centers. Some state Supreme Courts have ruled that outdoor shopping centers, like the sidewalks and certain parts of the shopping centers, are areas for free speech. Virginia hasn't yet. And they're recognizing the fact that as the Walmarts get bigger and as the little town squares that we used to be able to meet, the little farmer, if those things disappear, there's not going to be any free speech. So where you go, that's the only, if you're going to run for office, a guy like Rich Collins, the only place he's going to be able to get votes is at a place like in front of Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And if he's not obstructing somebody's ingress and egress, if he's on a sidewalk there, I guess the question is Does it take on more of a public property nature? Some states hold that it does take on more of a public property nature. It has access to a public street. I'm a big private property person. I don't believe people should be on my property or my home or whatever. But if you have a place where everybody's meeting and that's the only place they're meeting, where in the world are we going to have free speech these days? And we don't want to get to the point where we foolishly say that everything is going to be controlled by private property, so-called private property principles, and in the end, there's absolutely going to be no place for people to actually go exercise their First Amendment rights.
And of course, that was the big argument in the civil rights era was these are private property issues. If you own a restaurant, you should be able to serve whoever you want. If you have a club, you should be able to allow in whatever color kind of person you want. It's your private property. It's your right. But the federal government and the Supreme Court recognized that there were larger community and civil rights issues at play here, and that it went beyond just a personal property rights issue.
I see the Rich Collins issue just the same side of, the different side of the same coin.
Of the Kelo case.
Yeah, the Kelo case. It's corporate. We're becoming a corporate America. The corporations just up on 14th Street in Washington, D.C. own most of 14th Street, and they lobby the government. Small towns, and I go into small towns now, and the public square is dead. The only place people go is the Walmart.
Yeah.
Now, if I want to go speak to people about an issue, where do I have to go? I have to go to the Walmart.
You have to go where the people are.
If I can't go there, then there is no free speech. That's like saying you have free speech, but you can go exercise in the middle of the field where no one's at. Well, that's not reasonably free speech.
Yeah. Well, it's
so
like
I think that's the issue in the Collins case. It's not so much private property because all of us believe that no one's going to stand in our yard of our house, but our house doesn't have a parking lot and people don't come buy groceries there. And there's not 25 stores and that's not where everybody goes. There is private property. A person's home is their castle. And I do believe that.
John Whitehead is our guest. He's the executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute. We're going to take a very quick break. John Whitehead, executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute, based in Charlottesville and known around the world. John, you wrote a recent article about, actually the title of it is Rumsfeld's Ray Gun is Aimed at Us. What is Rumsfeld's Ray Gun and why is this aimed at us?
Well, just a little background. Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn, September 12th, well, about a week and a half ago, he suggested that the military use a non-lethal weapons and against American citizens. And what he's talking about is these new high-power microwave devices that supposedly will control crowd situations. And you're talking about protesters or people marching. And this is what he said. If we're not willing to use it here against our fellow citizens, then we should not be willing to use it in a wartime situation. This weapon is called, this is an amazing statement, it's nicknamed Rumsfeld's Ray Gun. It's developed by the Department of Defense, but it's just a high energy microwave beam. It's about 100 times more powerful than a microwave oven. And what it does, it hits the skin, penetrates the skin, causes pain, sometimes burns. Some documents were leaked, and they found out about 3 or 4 months ago that they had been testing this on test subjects at Kirkland Air Force Base, but in controlled situations where they took off all metal objects, zippers,
soldiers,
civilians and soldiers, people who had volunteered, and you know that they described what happened. It was hot, burning, and it knocked them down. They couldn't get up. They were stunned. But the problem with that is that was a controlled situation. They could move. They could leave. You can't do that in a crowd. And also, all the metal objects were taken off. If you're in a crowd, normal crowd situation, say in New York City, and you're protesting the war, you're protesting whoever or whatever, and they decide to use that against you, it can, what some of the experts are saying, it can cause amazing pain and probably tear out your cornea of your eyes, eardrums. So, but here we have an American official, the Air Force Secretary, Michael Wynn, saying we should go ahead and use it against American citizens. And what he's saying is give it to the police or local police or and use it as an experiment. But the thing is, it'll be on top of a van. It'll probably will look like a dish.
A radar dish.
And go by, and you won't know when it hits you. I mean, when it hits you, you'll be knocked down or whatever.
Now, you've seen a videotape of this actually being used.
I saw a short videotape of some of them being used, and I saw a crowd of 150 people just stunned and flattened. Immediately, it was almost, it took a few seconds. But the fact is, These weapons have been around for a while, but now, I mean, when they say things, I've been told this, if it happens in politics or in government, it was not a mistake. It was meant. So there was a reason he said this. And probably I would just conjecture these are probably somewhere already being planned for some kind of use. And, but here's the thing. It's being sold on the basis of safety. They're saying these will be safe. We won't kill people. And there are some experts who say that people will get severely damaged. But we were sold on tasers. Tasers will be perfectly safe.
Now they all have them.
Yeah, well, but people are getting killed with tasers.
Really?
They're getting out. They're getting, I mean, 5-year-old kids have been tasered. People in wheelchairs have been tasered. It's what I said about technology. Technology is not discriminating. And once people get a hold of something like this or government agents and they use it, people are going to get hurt, obviously. But this is by far the most astounding statement I've read in a long time. But the fact that we would use this invisible ray gun, it does exist, on local people who are probably protesting something.
Yeah.
Where they may now be doing a sit-in in front of a building.
Yeah, they would now use rubber bullets and gas.
They may be protesting the war, and they will not move in front of a recruiter's office. And they use something like this on people.
What's so amazing?
And it's not far-fetched, because you have to understand, with tasers, and I'm not absolutely opposed to tasers, but tasers have been misused. I mean, I wrote an article on this about a year ago about some of the situations in where, like, an old lady goes to a 85-year-old lady goes to a nursing home, wants to see somebody, and tell her to leave, and she says, I know she's in there, and they call the police, and they taser her, and she dies of a heart attack. So these things, the potential misuse of things like this is frightening. But again, I go back, we have the Secretary of the Air Force saying, let's go ahead and use it against American citizens.
And he doesn't just say that. He says, if we don't use it on our fellow citizens, then we should not be willing to use it against the enemy.
Exactly.
That makes no Secretary of the Air Force said this.
They're saying is we're the enemy. That's the implication.
That is absolutely
a certain situation.
That's beyond chilling, John.
It's beyond chilling.
And this is a real quote. I mean, this is what the secretary
put out here to see what kind of response. And you realize I'm one of the few people who's written on it. It's been very little said about it.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it anywhere
else. The media's dead. They just die on these things. And that's the mind-blowing thing. They're just lost.
My God. John Whitehead is our guest, executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute. Phone lines are open, 977-1070. Now, you are, what's really exciting here, you're working on a new book.
Yep.
Where a lot of these things are going to find their way into a new book for folks who aren't like myself, who go to the Rutherford.org website now and then and read your commentaries. A lot of this stuff is going to find its way into this new book. Give us an idea of what we can expect, the timeline, and some of the ideas that you're going to be, that you're looking at in this book that you're writing now.
Yeah, it should be out sometime next year. Right now it's tentatively titled Stand and Fight, and it's a book about the Bill of Rights, a history behind the Bill of Rights, what's happening, and then go in to tell some of the stories of people who have fought back. And it's basically a primer on the Bill of Rights wrapped around stories of people who have made a difference. They don't always win. The story, like Deb Davis out in Colorado, who would show her ID on a bus December 2005, and she was thrown to the floor, and she was on her way to work. She said, I know the Bill of Rights, I don't have to show my ID. And she won her case. And I talk about the national ID card, what that's going to mean. More data collection, that's all it means, and more people looking into our lives. Just stories like that. I have a chapter on Earl Washington, who was the fellow who courageously fought back here, was on death row for 18 years. So it's a story of what we would call ordinary people. And I see everybody as ordinary myself. Just ordinary people who don't have a lot of power, but who stand up and fight back. And then the end of the book will be like a Bill of Rights primer. It'll be something you can put under your arm. You can go down to the city council meeting, and then they say incredibly stupid things. You can say, wait a second, what about the Third Amendment? What about the Fourth Amendment? And read it to them. And that way you can fight back. But there are ways you can fight back. You can write letters. You can do all kinds of things.
But does it have any effect? Because look what's going on right now today in the U.S. Congress. They're looking at passing this law, which they say is to fight war on terrorism, and I don't agree with any of it. I think it is absolutely insane. It just strips so much of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, these core principles that this country was founded on. And I said this earlier, the terrorists don't have to knock down one other building to win. They can make us so scared that we start violating the principles that we stand for, and we just get rid of them in the name of security.
I interviewed the great Pete Seeger, the great folk singer, about 3 or 4 months ago, And near the end of the interview, he had this great statement. I said, Pete, things look pretty bad. He goes, yeah, but let me tell you my theory. And his teaspoon theory, he says, a teaspoon at a time, like a teeter-totter, and you keep putting a teaspoon, and finally that teeter-totter is going to tip over and you can win. So what he was saying was, it's what I say, one guy at a city council meeting is a jerk. 10 guys saying the same thing is a movement that the politicians have to listen to. I mean, when I drive into work in the mornings and smell the pollution, I'm hoping get 10 people to go down there and let's do something about the pollution and start controlling things. But, yeah, I think people can make a difference. The Patriot Act was a great thing when cities like Charlottesville and other cities across the country passed resolutions against the Patriot Act. That showed that there was some spirit there. So there is that spirit, but we have to keep it going. People like you talking on the radio, having eccentric like people like me on the radio, and our new bumper sticker, which we are passing out, and which is called "Speak Truth to Power." We want people to put that on their car and drive around and start honking their horn.
And how can people get this new bumper sticker?
A donation to the Ruffin Institute of any amount, from quarter to 50 cents on the way up. Hopefully, much more larger than that.
And the folks at the Rutherford, if you go to the Rutherford Institute, you can also get, just to remind folks, a free copy of the U.S. Constitution. And that's at Rutherford.org, www.rutherford.org. You can get the phone number there. Give them a call, and they will mail you a copy of the Constitution and encourage you to read the darn thing, which you wonder sometimes if folks in Washington even do that.
Oh, yeah, I don't think. Well, Bush admitted when he ran for president the first time, he said, you know, I really don't know much about the Constitution. I'm not a lawyer. And at that point, I said, how can you take a whole oath to uphold the Constitution? So I say in the book that I think all people that are elected to office should take a test of the Constitution before they can actually take office. They should have to pass it, a passing grade.
Yeah. Well, you would think if you got to do that to be a citizen, you would think there would be a higher bar to pass to serve an elected office at a stage where you could affect that Constitution.
Well, it's just like I had a fellow who was interviewing me not too long ago, and he was kind of upset with some of my views, and he was talking about the Bill of Rights. And I said, give me the five freedoms in the First Amendment right away. You're a reporter. He couldn't. I said, what's in the Third Amendment? He couldn't tell me. I said, you're interviewing me on the Bill of Rights? You got to give me a break here. So I think that the average citizen's got the Bill of Rights is only 462 words. People say, well, I can't read the Constitution. Well, you can read those 462 words in the Bill of Rights, can you? Make your kids memorize them, folks. That's the only hope we got. The Constitution is the only thing we have between us and an authoritarian state.
John Whitehead is the executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute. The website is www.rutherford.org. Thank you so much, sir. It's always an honor.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.